three federal contractors associations are asking the Supreme Court to settle a disagreement among circuit courts. It involves an interpretation of the False Claims Act. Several contractors have been bitten by what they say is an extravagant interpretation of something called implied certification. Alan Chavotkin is the Executive Vice President and Counsel at the Professional Services Council. He joins me now to explain the issues and what's at take. Alan, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
All right, so tell us about this case. There are some way of looking at something in the False Claims Act that two different courts disagree about, correct?
It is correct. And let me start with a description of what is an implied certification and why does that matter here in the government contract world. There are really two types of actions that a company can take. The government often will ask for an explicit certification that certain behaviors have taken place or have not taken place. The second is that actions themselves may imply that the company has met the terms and conditions of a contract. And it's that implied certification based on other actions that's at issue here. The False Claims Act, very important statute. We strongly support using it for its legit right purposes, but it's not a general enforcement statute. The False Claims Act is designed to affect false or fraudulent claims for payment. And what the courts generally, the courts of appeals across the United States, have split over an interpretation of whether an implied certification can be a basis for a false or fraudulent request for payment. What the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, based in Richmond, covering Northern Virginia area and other states, has said is that the standard is very low. That simply by making a request for any payment, a company is making an implied certification that they're in compliance with every term and condition of a contract, including references to other regulations or standards, even if not specifically called out in the contract. Other courts of appeals have said, no, there has to be a specific and explicit condition of payment before you can trigger a false claim for payments. That's the heart of the issue that's pending in our petition to the Supreme Court to resolve this matter.
So if a contractor under the Fourth Circuit's interpretation of this puts in a claim for payment for something it delivered, but I'm just making this up now, but suppose the smokestack of that company's factory is not quite in compliance with EPA regulations, therefore, under the Fourth Circuit, that company could be gone after for false claims.
That's correct. Even though the payment for the performance had nothing to do with compliance with the smokestack regulations. And so by lowering the standard by which a plaintiff, a third party, can come in and question whether behaviors are false, that's the expansive view, and in our view, a minority view across the country of what the standard for violation of the False Claims Act is and should be.
So it sounds like that could even be used to extend down to the activities of individuals within the company. For example, suppose somebody's, a shoplifter or something at a company, and that's discovered. I guess, in theory, under the Fourth Circuit, the company could be in trouble for what one of its employees did, again, unrelated to otherwise good delivery on the contract.
That's certainly theoretically true. I haven't seen that as I've reviewed the cases across the country, but once you open the door to that low standard, then there's no limits to what somebody can allege. And again, this is a question of whether the False Claims Act should be used as either a general enforcement statute, which the Congress and the Supreme Court and others have said it should not be, or is it really a way of restricting and prosecuting for false and fraudulent claims back to the government.
And sticking with the Fourth Court for a minute, do we know of cases there? What about the case that caused this ruling by the Fourth Circuit?
Yes, this is a case where a company, Triple Canopy, had a contract for performance in Iraq, and they were supposed to provide guard services. And in that In that contract, one of the requirements was that individuals providing the security services had to qualify for certain marksmanship standards. The standards were not in the contract; they were referenced in the contract. And the allegation in this case was that the individuals did not meet the qualification standards. And so, even though the payment request by Triple Canopy was for the exact hours worked, for the types of people that they employed, for everything else, the allegation is that failing to meet the marksmanship requirement was inducing a false or fraudulent claim for payment. And we don't take in our petition, we don't take any position on the merits of this case and whether that's a true or not true statement, whether they did comply or not, or whether even that requirement for marksmanship was an implied certification. But we do say that the threshold that the Fourth Circuit uses is out of line, considerably out of line, with where the rest of the circuit courts are, and that's why the Supreme Court should take up this case.
We're speaking with Alan Shavatkin, the Executive Vice President and Counsel at the Professional Services Council. And what have the other courts, what are some of the cases, or can you name a case in one of the other circuits that is a little bit more limited in the way it interprets the False Claims Act?
Yes, there's several cases, one coming out of the Seventh Circuit, which specifically was an education institution, and there the court held that these background regulations, it was a compliance with a whole set of grants requirements. They were sued because they violated one of those multiplicity of hundreds of pages of rules, and the court there said no, that these background regulations were not a requirement for as a condition of payment, and therefore not going to follow the Fourth Circuit decision, going to hold that the False Claims Act requires that a provision be at least acknowledged as a condition of payment.
So which are the other two groups that you've teamed up with to petition as a friend of the court here?
Well, we've joined with the National Defense Industrial Association and the International Stability Operations Association, and we've partnered with them on many cases, various friend of the court briefs at various stages of litigation. What's nice about this case is there is such a deep split among the federal circuit courts of appeals that we believe that our petition, our joining in as a friend of the court, will help aid the Supreme Court in deciding to take up this case.
And just a question on details of False Claims Act claims. If the government goes after someone for a false claim, what are the possible consequences besides denial of the payment itself?
Well, there are triple damages. If there is a violation, if they're found to be a company is found to have violated the false claim, submitted a false claim, there are directly under the False Claims Act, there are triple damages for the event. Then it could trigger any number of collateral issues, suspension and debarment of the company, denial of option contracts, options for follow-on contracts, could call into question the responsibility of the company to perform future government contracts. And that really goes to the heart of what the government contracts rules are all about. So very important concept, yet as I said at the beginning, also very important that the False Claims Act be used and be available for the right circumstances.
So is there a case that, well, I guess the Supreme Court is pretty much done for this season, so you got to wait a year. Is there a case that is ripe to go to the Supreme Court? I mean, will that Triple Canopy case go forward at this point? If the court agrees to hear it?
This is it's a request to the court to take up the case. We're confident that over the next couple of weeks they'll decide whether to accept it. But the good news, if there's good news in this issue, is one of the criteria that the Supreme Court uses to consider whether to resolve a case is whether there is a split in the circuit courts of appeals. There are 11 circuit courts of appeals in the United States. 10 of them have already weighed in on this specific issue of implied certification. 7 take a very seven of them have a more favorable view in our perspective, three of them, including the Fourth Circuit, but also including the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, two of the appeal areas of the United States where there is heavily government contracting, have taken a minority view. And so we hope that this 7-3 split in the circuits will encourage the Supreme Court to take the case.
So the Fourth and D.C. is the Ninth, the third one?
The Ninth is the third.
And
you've
so now
some, you've done some good work.
Well, recently I was going to say the composition of the D.C. has come to resemble that, if you want to say politically, of the Ninth. So the question, you just don't want that perception or that interpretation to spread everywhere else.
Well, what we don't want, particularly in the area of False Claims Act, but in the area of government contracts generally, you want to make sure that there is consistency and predictability in behaviors. And so this split among the circuits, the areas of the country, you don't want a government contractor doing work in Northern Virginia to have that same performance come out with a different result if they were doing work in Huntsville, Alabama, or Dallas, Texas, or in Denver, Colorado. And that's why it's important that the court resolve this split so that all of us know from a consistency and a uniformity standpoint what the standards are to be.
All right. Alan Javotkin is Executive Vice President and Counsel at the Professional Services Council. As always, thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you.